From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 6th day of March, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at globalanalytics.biz. Chris Bellillo from Macomb, Illinois. He's an historian and a musician. Will join us to discuss tonight's airing of Illinois Country on WTVP and WILL. Those are in Peoria and Urbana, Illinois, and cover a large part of the state. It's a great documentary. You want to stick around to hear more about that. And then as we close out our time together, Eric Snodgrass will be here from Nutrien Ag Solutions to talk about the weather forecast on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, March corn today down 7.25 cents. It settled at $3.77 1/4. The May at 3.76, 5.75 lower. In July, down 4.5 at 3.79 1/4. March beans down 5.75 at 8.83 1/4. The May at 8.91 1/4, 5.75 lower. July down a nickel at $9. August at 9.01 3/4, down 4.75. And soybeans for the November new crop 9.05 1/2, down 3. The bean oil 62 cents lower. The bean meal up 90 cents. Wheat futures in the July soft red down 2.75 at 5.16 3/4. The hard red at 4.53 1/2 unchanged on the day. Live cattle futures down 2.90 at $105.75. Feeders down 2.92 1/2 at $130.70. And the April lean hogs 55 cents higher at $65.92 1/2. The Dow Jones Industrial Average off 760 points. The U.S. dollar down 0.845. And gold futures up $12.80. Crude oil for the day down $4.70 a barrel, and I think that's where I would like to start today. Mike Zuzulo at globalanalytics.biz, because this was something that was precipitated by a little battle between Russia and Saudi Arabia, and it reminded me that back in the winter of 15-16, prices for crude oil fell, and once they got, I think, to about the mid-30s, they just laid on the price of corn in particular all winter long, and it was a really tough winter time.
Yeah, a lot to unpack there, Todd, because we have a lot different market structure than we did back in 15-16, because back during that time when we were hitting 26, as you say, $30 a barrel oil, we were also seeing the U.S. dollar skyrocket essentially against the European currency, because that was the European issue and China was right behind them and Greece was mixed in there. And so the dollar was a real safe haven, and we had a really tough looking gold market. We had a really tough looking crude oil market. We had a very strong dollar market. And it is almost the exact opposite if you look at it from that perspective, because we've got a situation now where, as you say, the Saudis wanted to add another 1.5 million barrel production cut to 2.1 million that they're already doing as a group. Russia said, no, thank you. That took the crude down 10%. We're off about 37% from the three-month high in the West Texas Intermediate. But kind of getting back to that issue of the market dynamic is, I do think, and we've talked about this on Commodity Week, we talked about this at the Beef House meeting, I do think the Fed rate cut and also the coronavirus particulars, as more information gets disseminated and the mortality rate stays down and manageable, I think maybe the market's trying to parse the food versus the fuel, because March corn was up 18.5 cents this week, and March beans only down a penny, March meal up $2.10, March soft red wheat down 6.25 on the week, and those are preliminary numbers. But that kind of gives you a picture of it wasn't all doom and gloom with the outside markets like we're used to talking about.
All right, so the food versus the fuel side of this thing. So we've been talking ethanol from the buildup all the way through 2015. That's where we maxed out relatively on how many gallons we're supposed to produce, about 15 billion gallons, based on what's coming out of Washington, D.C., and policy. Speaking of which, there was a policy issue today with the Trump administration. You can talk about that maybe. But then there was, at that point, what happens now? And it appears, based on some of the numbers that came from the Ag Forum, and we talk about this in Commodity Week, and we talked about it over at the All Day Ag Outlook, that red meat is really the big function over the next 10 years or so.
Yeah, and this is the most disappointing part of this week's trade, because we do see this food versus fuel issue building in the grains, but we didn't see it as much in the beef market especially. We did get to see some of it in the pork market because the export sales were good in pork but not good in beef. And what we're still fighting in the beef market and the livestock market is the linkage between the stocks and the idea that wealth destruction on Wall Street equals demand destruction on Main Street and in Asia as well. So we haven't linked the train together adequately enough, in my view, to feel like we are out of the woods yet. And so it would be very helpful, I think, at this stage for at least the crude oil market to find some stability and the stock market not to have these kind of wild swings that we're starting to see. 50% volatility on the VIX index is not probably going to be good for many people, whether you're commodities or equities. But your point is very well taken. At some point in time, if the dollar stays at a 13-month low, which it hit today, and all of a sudden it was at a 34-month high last week, if it remains down in this sub-96 level, and 95.80 has always been kind of a number that I've wanted it to get below and stay below, if you stay below 95.80 on the dollar index, then you really, I think, start to charge up the demand side, both financial demand and credible physical demand. And I say that especially knowing that we had some pretty good export sales in corn to unknown, and also, I believe, South Korea or Japan today as well.
So it's about trying to stabilize the economy at this point.
Yeah, it's about thinking that the mortality rate's not bad enough, we're going to kill off commodity demand, and it's about not destroying enough wealth around the world's financial markets that all of a sudden protein is not what the go-to source of protein source is going to be, still be red meat in Asia because of their wealth effect and because of what they make in terms of income. And that's the dynamic that is a lot harder to get through, and it takes months and months and months. But a weaker dollar for the next 3 or 4 months, and we talked about this, the beef house, this may have been a coordinated effort by the G7, kind of like what they did in the mid-80s, and say, we need a weak dollar. We can't keep throwing interest rate cut after interest rate cut out there as all the world's central banks have done in the last 10 years because they're out of room to maneuver. So maybe everybody is in one unison, one unified voice wanting inflation, and that means a weaker dollar.
Yeah, so by stabilizing the economy, I mean using the United States to stabilize the global economy, as you suggested there. The Trump administration on ethanol, it looks almost like a reversal, but I don't know what will happen with the courts. What'd you make of that today?
Well, I couldn't understand it, quite frankly. I mean, I felt as though we were going into an imminent type mindset, very shortly type mindset announcement by EPA earlier this week, and we hit the record stocks production on ethanol on the weekly numbers. So we needed something definitive, not something that was a little bit hard to parse through and make it more like a phase one type. Well, what does this mean and what does that mean? So I don't think the market really took it that well. I will say, though, in defense of the policy that they came out with, from what I know, when you have crude oil down, you know, $5 a barrel and gasoline down 12 cents and heating oil down 10 cents, you're getting a lot of mixed signals right now. So I think maybe next week we'll have a lot more clear picture of what the trade thinks about what the EPA is thinking about doing here. And I think that goes along with the USDA report. I'll certainly be looking at the ethanol number as a result of, you know, their announcement today with the USDA WASDE numbers coming out just in 2 working days.
You mentioned phase one. Some good news on the soybean side from China today.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing I saw was a newswire reporting across the pond that China had bought about 40 cargoes of soybeans from Brazil and Argentina this week versus around 10 the prior week. So they are buying very aggressively again. That is great news, whether it's us or Brazil, as long as they don't stop buying. And, you know, they were very good in the weekly export sales. The big hit for the soybeans, I think, was the upcoming report and the soybean oil and that linkage with the energy sector. We still have a lot of issues in South America that we've really just kind of thrown off to the side at this point and thrown in a closet, if you ask me, because we've got the USDA numbers and the energy markets to get through first.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Great to be with you, sir.
Mike Zuzlo is with globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. That news from China, by the way, is that it has decided to lift tariffs on the import of U.S. soybeans, at least for an extended period of time. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us and listen to us on demand at WILLAG.org. Hey, you know, the good folks right here at Illinois Public Media, WILL Channel 12, have created a brand new documentary called Illinois Country. It's about the role Illinois musicians have played in the development of country music. It's airing on Channel 12, WILL, and many other public television stations across the state. If it's not aired on yours yet and you want them to air it, just give them a call and ask them to contact WILL, Illinois Public Media, in Urbana-Champaign, to see if they can get that on the air on your local public television stations. It is a really good documentary. In fact, I happen to be a Passport member. I'm a member of WILL. That's not a surprise, frankly, I suppose. And I watched it last night. That would have been Thursday evening, the 5th day of March. It didn't air on the television station, but I watched it over the internet, because I'm a cord cutter at home. You could, too, if you're a Passport member. One of the people that is highlighted in this story, and actually kind of tells the story, is historian and musician Chris Bellillo. He's from Macomb, Illinois. Hey, Chris, it's really great to talk to you again. It's been a long time, man.
Yes, it has, and it's so nice to hear from you as well. Seems to me the last time we worked together was the Illinois State Fair a number of years back. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I was working the Illinois State Fair. We did the Closing Market Report live on stage and live to air both. And I needed some traveling music. People know that I use music to transition from one segment to the other. And you were there with the folks from RFD and Farm Bureau and managed to sit in with me and, just gave me a little music for the background and to get from one place to the other. It was fantastic. I actually, that was one of my favorite times, Chris, because I felt like I was really putting on a show, right? I do it every day, but when somebody's there live with you, it means so much. Country music and farm broadcasting kind of goes hand in hand and always has.
Absolutely.
Because agriculture has been in the background. In fact, you explained this up front in the documentary as it relates to WLS and the National Barn Dance, right?
Oh, absolutely. These shows revolutionized life in rural Illinois. You could be in a farm outside of Champaign in the middle of nowhere and all of a sudden hear people playing live music in Chicago, and it's music that you relate to. And you see everything start to evolve and change once that sound begins to be broadcast.
Yeah, so tell me about the development of country music in Illinois and Chicago's role, because it was kind of the place, I guess, before Nashville became the place, and it was because of Chicago maybe that Nashville got its good start.
Well, I would certainly agree with that idea. Let's start with that point, because in its day, the WLS Barn Dance was the biggest Opry-style radio show in the nation. It was bigger than the Grand Ole Opry. It was bigger than the Louisiana Hayride. All of the biggest country stars performed on that show. They were cast members. They were guests. And it was a center for country music. You had recording facilities up there that were recording this music, broadcast places like this. And then they actually took a touring version of the Barn Dance and toured it all around the Midwest, going to rural communities and county fairs, and really engaging and connecting with people all over the place.
The original singing cowboy kind of got his start there, too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Gene Autry played on there constantly. And these were the personas that they presented. A lot of this sort of evolved out of the old traditional tent theaters, medicine show kind of performances that involved, you know, comedy and dancing and music and all kinds of entertainment. By the way, this is also going to split off and get involved into vaudeville in a more commercial sense. But it really gets its beginnings in rural America, and certainly in Illinois, rural Illinois. It evolves through time, but this is the music that starts out as everyday music people are playing. Dance music, you know, fiddle tunes, traditional tunes that evolve through time to become, you know, what we now consider country music. It all starts from this sort of grassroots music that people are playing as a way to entertain and sustain themselves. And then with the modern developments of mass transportation systems, railroads and steamboats, you know, these things spread more and more, eventually hard roads and highways, and certainly broadcast.
Chris Villillo is a musician and an historian that plays a pivotal role in the brand new documentary from Illinois Public Medium. It's called Illinois Country. You can find it tonight on WILL TV at 7:30. It'll air at that same time on WTVP out of Peoria. You can find all the air dates on the website illinoiscountry.org. That's illinoiscountry.org. If you've not watched this yet, or even if you have, come back and take a look at Illinois Country. Of course, you can find it if you're a Passport user of either of those stations as well, on demand any time that you'd like to watch. Illinois Country, it's a great documentary. I'll have more with Chris Villillo at a later date during the closing market report. But for now, be sure that you tune in either to WILL-TV Champaign tonight or WTVP Peoria at 7:30 p.m. for Illinois Country. On this Friday, we're joined by Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions in Agribowl to talk about the weather forecast. First things first, thank you. Thank you so very much for being at the All Day Ag Outlook. It was a great meeting Tuesday, and you helped to kick it off in the right way.
Yeah, that was a fun one. I was truly engaged by not only the panel members, but the other speakers, and then the audience was fantastic. That is what we should be doing in ag more often. So well done, Todd, putting that together.
Oh, thank you so much. Okay. So we had a great day that day. It was dry, clear, warm. It's been that way. Today's not. I don't know what that means for the near term.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, even though today is this cold, blustery day here on Friday, you know, across central Illinois, technically it's not even that cold compared to normal. We've just been kind of conditioned this winter to feel, you know, much above average temperatures. And if you don't like it, just wait till tomorrow. We're going to climb about 10 degrees over today, getting up into the 50s with a lot of sunshine. It's getting even warmer, but a bit more windy on Sunday. We're watching a pretty active pattern develop, though. And this is the part that kind of makes this a little tough, because we need to have more drier stretches with drier weather to get that soil ready to be worked on once we get into the end of March and the beginning of April. And the conditions that we're seeing right now through at least the middle of the month of March, well, starting early next week, you got chances of rain on Monday and multiple chances throughout next week. And the real issue here is that we've seen developing in the Pacific Ocean a very interesting, it's kind of a block, but technically the pattern still is moving, but we've got a split flow, but now the split flow is happening over the Aleutian Islands, which means the flow comes back together in a trough over California. This will be returning much needed moisture to California, but that is the same pattern that we saw last May and June, where there was a trough in the west, and it pulled systems right out of the southwest, and we saw repeated low pressure systems. So it's earlier than a year ago when you think about having such high frequency of rainfall events, but it's certainly going to be one that's going to set us up on the wetter side of thing in the coming, probably the next 2 weeks. But there is one good thing about that pattern, and that is chances of us getting stretches of below normal temperatures for a few days is very limited. So it looks as though we're going to be going through March with some warmer temperatures here.
Anything on long-range data that we ought to know about?
Yeah, so we did just get in some brand-new, what we call the European weeklies. They're just part of the guidance package that we use to figure out longer-range weather. And if we just look from like March 15th to April 15th. Right now, the models are sticking with what we call persistence. In other words, the way that they were initialized with that pattern I just described, they want to keep that all the way through the beginning of April. So that means the warmer ideas are still in place, but it looks as though it's going to be a wetter March for much of the Corn Belt, especially the eastern part of the Corn Belt as well. And we also, with it now being past the fifth of the month, we got a brand new, very long range update from the European model, which is tending to keep that same pattern in place through the early part of our planting window. But I just want everybody to remember that when we look at these month long forecasts, I'm talking about April, May, June, you know, that whole time period, the accuracy of these long range models is limited. And therefore, we need to watch carefully for any sort of a pattern adjustment as we work our way into spring. And I'll tell you, the number one thing I'm watching are what we call the global wind anomalies. They're fast right now. If they do slow down, and there are indications that they could, that would be a setup that could open up some planting, wide planting windows for us in late April and early May. And I'm going to keep a very close eye on it. But in the near term, chances of it staying on the wetter side of things, that's it's maybe 60-40 in favor of wet as we progress into the very beginning of our planting windows.
And I bet at the All Day that you were asked many times what the summer weather is going to be like. And I know that's very difficult for meteorologists. Do you have good answers?
Yeah, I do. I'll tell you, there are some things that are brewing that's got a lot of folks talking right now about some concern over some summer heat and some summer drought. And, you know, we always remember that this is the time of year that everybody just starts thinking about that. It's like, oh, wait, winter's over. Time to start worrying about something new. And a lot of times it's, well, we're going to get hit with another 2012-like drought. Now, remember, in order to get big droughts like that, we have got to have the atmosphere completely blocked up into a huge ridge that's centered over North and South Dakota. If that happens, we are tucked under the heat of that ridge. We're blocked from the tropical moisture out of the Gulf, which means we just don't get the rainfall we need. All right. Those years that give us that pattern often have very cold water off the west coast of South America, in the central equatorial Pacific, and off the west coast of North America, including the Gulf of Alaska. So anytime we see a model run that suggests that those temperatures are going to cool off, people immediately start to think, hey, is this a possibility? And right now, we are watching those waters cool off, but it's just one piece of the larger puzzle as to what might control our summer, but it's often one of the earlier indicators. So all that I want to do at this point is I want to put a bug in people's ear and let folks know that this is something that I'm going to pay attention to. And the moment I start to see it become a bigger issue, especially if we get the global winds to slow down, we get some other things that could suggest blocking, then we do need to have a discussion about it.
Hey, speaking of bigger issues and summertime weather, Argentina looks like it's been dry for, I think, 3 weeks now.
Yeah, it's been quite dry in Argentina, and this is not really hurting any of the very early planted stuff that they're trying to harvest right now. But anything planted a little bit later, remember, they plant over such a large time window down there that this has been impacting some of the full season crop. Now, for the next week, it continues to be hotter and drier than normal, but brand new data this morning suggests that week two, so after we talk next Friday, that is looking to bring back in more normal precipitation, which could start to calm some fears about this being really devastating for that crop. So we also have got to keep a very close eye on Argentina and southern Brazil, too, as they finish out their first crop soybeans and get the second crop or the Safrina crop in.
Hey, you have a great weekend, Eric.
I will. You too.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon.